After 7 years of deliberations, studies, reviews, and activism, the story of the Keystone XL pipeline project seems to have come to a close. President Obama announced on Friday that he was rejecting the Trans-Canada project. Just weeks before a make-or-break UN climate conference in Paris, Obama said, quote, America is now a global leader when it comes to taking serious action to fight climate change. And frankly, approving this project would have undercut that global leadership. Climate justice activists who have fought long and hard are celebrating the end of the proposal for an 1,100-mile-long pipeline that would have cut across the United States, transporting 800,000 barrels of tar sands oil a day. The victory comes just over a month after Shell Oil pulled its project of offshore oil exploration in the Arctic. Joining me now is Daphne Wysham. She's the director of the Climate and Energy Program at the Center for Sustainable Economy, and she joined us to discuss the Shell Oil victory. Welcome back to the program, Daphne.
Thank you for having me.
And here again is another victory. How thrilled are you and others?
Well, we're enormously thrilled, but this is just the beginning of the end of new fossil fuel infrastructure. It's clearly a turning point, a watershed point in our movement, but what we're calling for now in our next step is no new fossil fuel infrastructure, starting in Portland, Oregon, and moving up and down the West Coast, and hopefully on the East Coast, and all around the world. This is the beginning of an effort to essentially turn the tide at the very last minute against temperatures rising that threaten human civilization, and we have no time to lose.
I'm really glad to hear that activists like yourself are taking the offensive and basically not resting on your laurels because time is running out. But let's, for a minute at least, focus on what you think led up to Obama's decision. I mean, for years, this seemed like this project was likely to pass. There's been a lot of support from the administration, and the incredible civil disobedience over many years seem to have had some impact, but not necessarily much impact. But now it seems as though it did have an impact that we weren't seeing. How much do you attribute his decision to the civil disobedience, the activism, etc.?
Oh, I think it was 100% about civil disobedience, activism, 40,000 people surrounding the White House in 2013, 400,000 people marching in the streets of New York City for climate justice. Of course, we now have also reached a point where there is greater public acceptance of the climate science. It's becoming clearer and clearer every day, and certainly you're feeling the brunt of the climate impact on drought in California and extreme weather events. It's becoming clearer and clearer just how serious this crisis is, but you know, it started in the tar sands of Alberta with Native with First Nations folks, and all along the pipeline, Native Americans were resisting this pipeline, ranchers, others came together really across divisions and essentially worked as a coalition, a huge coalition across this country with one voice standing together saying, we will not allow this pipeline to proceed, and Friday we won.
What role did activists in Nebraska play as well? This was a state through which the pipeline would have cut, and it became a sort of epicenter of the fight.
That's right. There was a major decision yet to be made in Nebraska by one of the judges there around whether or not this pipeline could proceed. And it's possible that the judge would have ruled against the pipeline had it continued through the courts. So that was preempted by President Obama's decision.
Now, the Keystone XL pipeline project was built around using an extremely dirty fuel, which is tar sands, an extremely inefficient fuel as well. So how important was this fight to kill this project, given that many other fuels are still in place? We still have the use of dirty fuels like coal, although coal plants have been under stricter regulations. Should we be seeing this as one piece of a bigger puzzle?
Yeah, I mean, what is happening in the background, of course, is that the price of oil and gas has plummeted as a result of all of the fracking that is happening in this country. Excuse me. And as a result, tar sands, which is some of the most energy intensive and expensive forms of fossil fuel to extract from the soil, where you literally have to heat up the soil and in order to turn it into a liquid and then add all sorts of chemicals and other substances to allow it to flow in a pipeline. It is one of the most difficult fossil fuels to extract. It's what people call one of the many forms of extreme energy that we are now beginning to extract as the easily accessible forms of energy become depleted. So simultaneous to the fracking that's going on in the U.S., the price of oil and gas has dropped dramatically, and tar sands suddenly becomes less economically competitive. And it's one reason, you know, the cynics could say, well, it's going to come back in another form as soon as the price of oil rises. But, you know, I think what the climate movement is beginning to do is it's flexing its muscle and it's saying, no, we actually have come to a point where we are going to see stranded assets, where investments in fossil fuel infrastructure will no longer make sense, and investors should pay attention.
Now, the TransCanada, which is a company that had been spearheading this campaign for the Keystone XL pipeline proposal, on November 2nd, asked the Obama administration, so a week ago, asked Obama to suspend its review of the project, which led many to believe that maybe this was its way of avoiding getting a rejection, because they saw that the rejection might be coming. It also would have given Obama an out if he wanted to just sit on the sidelines and drag this project on and dump it into the lap of the next president. The fact that he actually took a position, and I want to repeat his quote. He said, America is now a global leader when it comes to taking serious action to fight climate change. Well, that's arguable. But he said this project would have undercut that global leadership. Those are strong words.
Yeah, they are strong words. And I'm just going to move away from my phone call. Several things have been happening in the background here. Of course, Trudeau became prime minister in Canada, and that changed the politics completely in Canada.
He was
supportive. And who knows how much of that was, his way of deferring to some of his supporters in running for office, and how much of that was sincere. But clearly, the politics have shifted in Canada. So that was one thing that has changed. And the other thing that is all about the timing is we're just weeks away from the major climate summit in Paris. And so Obama is fighting an uphill battle with everyone from, China, who apparently is not counting their greenhouse gas emissions accurately. The African delegation is threatening to walk out because they aren't getting enough funding on the table to address adaptation and mitigation to climate change. There's a whole host of other issues that are playing out, and this was one sort of ace that Obama could play prior to the Paris climate negotiations that shows he is, in fact, responsive to social movements and responsive to calls for greater action on climate change.
Yeah, it's a very, very important time, and timing is crucial for this project. Let's talk briefly about what the stakes are in Paris. The Keystone XL pipeline is one project. It was a project that, if it had gone through, would have significantly impacted the amount of emissions that we're facing, but it was a project that actually never realized. We have climate change now. So many are calling the Paris conference a make or break conference. What do you think? What's at stake?
Well, I've been to enough of these international climate negotiations to know that there's always all of this expectation that somehow our world leaders are going to save us from the climate catastrophe. And the fact of the matter is that it is up to all of us. It's up to social movements on the ground to push them much further than the governments will ever agree to go to. There's a lot of brinksmanship. There's a lot of waiting until the last minute to play a very weak hand. And we know from the commitments that are on the table right now that the commitments from all of the different countries that have submitted their cuts in emissions, that we aren't even close to 2 degrees Celsius, which is exceedingly dangerous. The scientific community actually is suggesting we need to get closer to 1 degree Celsius or 1.5, but not 2. And the commitments on the table get us closer to 4 degrees Celsius. So we've got a long way to go. And it's one reason why groups such as the groups that I'm working with in Portland and up in Seattle have been essentially taking matters into their own hands and saying, no new fossil fuel infrastructure. We are drawing a line. If we need to keep 80% of proven fossil reserves in the ground, we need to stop acting as though business as usual can continue. We need to stop building the infrastructure, because once you do that, the projects will move forward and these fossil fuels, including coal, will be exported and burned very cheaply. We're going to stand in the way of this new fossil fuel infrastructure, just as we did in the way of the Finca and Shell, and we're going to say no more. So that's the battle that I see being fought on the West Coast of the United States in coming weeks, and I think you'll be hearing a lot more about that.
And in general, finally, how important is activism from the United States, given the leader that we've been in pushing for extraction of fuels and use of fuels? I want to mention, actually, today there's about 1,000 young activists that are reportedly marching in D.C. that are linking up things like racial justice, immigration, and climate justice reform under this banner that they're calling Our Generation, Our Choice. It includes members from 350.org, as well as the Fossil Fuel Student Divestment Network, Working Families, and Million Hoodies, linking these issues together. And it seems as though when you have issues of climate justice joining up or being put into the same category of importance as racial justice and immigration, then there is no stopping activism.
Absolutely. And let's make no mistake that the fight against the Keystone XL pipeline started with First Nations folks fighting for their right to survive as they're being slowly poisoned by the tar sands. And it was only, once it began to become clear just how serious the climate impact was of the tar sands that the rest of civil society got on board. So many times it is, the most immediate impacts on frontline communities that trigger a much bigger social movement. But we need to stand in solidarity with the frontline communities, and those include immigrants. Because as the temperatures rise around the globe, we're going to see an awful lot of climate refugees, and we need to be treating them with the kind of compassion that we would hope to be treated with were we in their shoes. So it's very exciting that these movements are coming together, and I think we could be reaching critical mass very soon.
Absolutely. In fact, speaking of climate refugees, Oxfam just released a new study that is called Shockwaves, Managing the Impacts of Climate Change on Poverty, about how climate change is going to be impacting the most vulnerable communities among us, which is something most of us already know. Well, Daphne, I want to thank you, as always, for the work that you do and for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Daphne Wysham is the director of the Climate and Energy Program at the Center for Sustainable Economy, talking about the Keystone XL pipeline decision. President Obama late last week announced that he was defeating it.